Division 2 of the Court of Appeals, we have one case set for argument this morning, in the interest of MGC-G. Counsel appear to be present and ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. For those of you who may not have argued here recently, let me simply review the ground rules. This case is set for 15 minutes per side. The appellant may reserve whatever part of the 15 minutes you wish for rebuttal. You'll be guided by a lighting system on the podium that works as follows. When your argument begins, the green light comes on. When 10 minutes have expired, the amber light will come on. And when your full 15 minutes have expired, the red light will come on. The clock on the podium counts backwards, so you'll know how much time you've got remaining. Feel free to adjust the podium up or down, depending upon your needs. We would ask you to stay close to the podium because we're recording your arguments, and we find it useful sometimes to go back and listen to them again when we're writing our opinion. If you stray from the podium, your voice will not be picked up well. Also be advised that the arguments are available over the internet within a couple of days of today's date. So if there's anything of a sensitive nature you don't wish to communicate to the world, be advised accordingly. We've read the briefs in your case. We're familiar with the facts as you set them forth. So to the extent you want to proceed directly to your legal argument, that's fine with us. However, the case is yours to argue as you wish. We're ready for argument.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Ann Gill, registration number 14610. I'm appearing on behalf of the mother in this case, and because they're all initials, I won't try to confuse everyone with that. Your Honors, we're here today because the district court applied the wrong legal standard in denying mother's motion to modify child support. Section 1410.122, the statute that addresses modification of child support, provides that a modification may be granted when the changed conditions result in a 10% change in the child support guidelines from the current child support order. The previous order in this case was the 2003 order, which set child support at $500 per month. The district court refused, specifically declined to use that as the starting point of its analysis. That's an incorrect application of the statute. Its trial court also further justified its going to a different starting point in its analysis by pointing to the stipulation between the parties which led to the 2003 order. That also was error because the stipulation between the parties in 2003 did not address or state anything about the basis for future modifications of child support. The 2003 stipulation, which is not the subject of this appeal, we recognize that it was the law and mother's motion did seek to modify child support based on what was the order and the stipulation in 2003. That 2003 stipulation addressed two items. It said child support shall be $500 per month with the mother's husband paying the health insurance, and it allowed mother to relocate with the child. Those are the two things the stipulation addressed. It did not say anything at all about future modifications and what the starting point should be for determining whether there was a basis for modification.
So is the determination of what the starting point should be an issue of law or an issue of fact?
It's an issue of law, Your Honor. I believe that 1410.122 states that the modification must be based on the current child support order. That's subsection 2 of 1410.122. That's also confirmed in cases such as Marriage of Lishnevsky, which cites the current child support order as the starting point for the analysis of whether there has been a substantial and continuing change resulting in more than a 10% change in the guidelines applications.
If your argument is correct, Ms. Gill, though, wouldn't it simply undermine the stipulation that was entered into for a $500 number? I mean, that seems to have been bargained for here in return for withdrawal of the objection to the move, does it not?
Yes, there was a give and take in reaching that stipulation. However, Your Honor, Section 1410.112 specifically provides that when the parties do stipulate as to terms involving children, be it support, parenting time, or decision-making, the court has an independent duty to determine whether the stipulation or agreement between the parties serves the best interests of the child. Here, the court did not expressly address the best interests of the child in adopting the stipulation of the parties in 2003. The 2007 motion, when the court did conduct its hearing in 2008, it decided the prior stipulation and addressed it as a contract and failed to address the best interests of the child at all, which it should have done under 1410.112 and the cases construing 1410.112. So it's not purely a bargained for position in the stipulation, but here mother did come back nearly 3 years later and said that she thought that conditions had changed, and then her argument was that in us determining whether conditions have changed, looked at the $500 per month number as the starting point of the analysis.
Ms. Gill, can I ask you, if we look at, I understand your argument on the statute, if we look at the reality, what conditions changed for dad? His income went up, you know, by a couple hundred or a couple thousand dollars, didn't it?
At the 2008 hearing, there was a stipulation that the dad's income was now some $4,866. In 2003, there was no financial information introduced at the hearing. I believe that the $500 per month number probably was derived from a 2002 order in which child support had been set at $533 per month.
But I thought, is there a dispute as to the difference in dad's income between the prior order and now? I didn't think there was.
Excuse me, Your Honor. At the hearing which the district court held in 2008, the parties did stipulate as to what father's income was at that time and also as to what it had been in 2003, but the 2003 court did not have that information.
All right, but in terms of the stipulation that's in terms of the income now, there's no question it's far less than 10% difference, correct?
If you are looking at what his income was in 2003, my argument is that that's error to use that as your analysis under the statute and case law, because the stipulation did not address it, that the statute requires starting from the current order, and the 2003 court never had the financial information that could have resulted in a different number.
But didn't everyone agree that it was that the number, if you looked at dad's salary in 2003, would have gotten you to $533 per month?
No, the $533 per month was the order in 2002. You'll find that worksheet in the restricted record at page 31, and that was based on $4,527 income, and that the father at that time was also paying the health insurance. When mother relocated, her husband picked up the health insurance. There are a lot of things that changed, and the 2003 court apparently did not have any worksheets. I studied that slim little record. I cannot find any worksheets in either 2003 or 2008, so we have to rely purely on the numbers in the stipulation at the hearing.
Well, but there's no question, I mean, and correct me if this is wrong, it seemed to me there was no question that in 2003, everyone was starting from the premise that the support would have been $533 but for any negotiation. Am I wrong about that?
That is my understanding, Your Honor, because there was no information to the contrary in the record.
All right. Now, if we were going to compare apples and apples here in terms of any changed circumstance, why wouldn't we look at the number that would have gotten you to 533 versus today?
I think you ought to. The court did not do that.
Right now, but if we use those numbers, then we get a less than 10% difference, don't we?
No, Your Honor, you do not. You have introduced a new starting point, which is not the one the court used and not the one which I had argued or that the trial counsel had argued on mother's behalf. The worksheet from 2002, which introduced the $533 child support, shows a much lower income for father. I think it's close to the amount that was stipulated in the 2008 hearing, but off the top of my head, I think there's some difference. But the result in the 2003 worksheet was the $533. If you use father's income that was stipulated to in 2008, you get a child support guideline number that's at least 645. I believe that the mom's trial counsel argued for 659. If you use the court's finding of 645, that's definitely more than a 10% change from either 533 or 500.
Okay, and forgive me, I don't mean to monopolize your time here, Ms. Gill. I'm just trying to understand the facts. There's a lot of numbers floating around. I have in my head somewhere that dad was making the argument in 2003 that his calculation of actual support was 64, would have been 647. Is that, I mean, I'm not trying to remember where the 647 came from, but it's in the record somewhere.
Yes, and this is one of the reasons why I tried to find worksheets in the record and was frustrated by the absence of them. If you look at the transcript of the 2008 hearing, there are a lot of numbers bandied about. Mother's position was depending on exactly what the health insurance amount was and trying to look at doing computations. I believe that mother's counsel argued that the child support would be in the range of 659 to 680. As I recall the 2008 transcript, father's counsel argued that the application of the guidelines based on the 2008 income would result in a guideline support number in the range of 625 to 645. The trial court in its order used the number 645. So the 647 was probably mentioned in that hearing, okay. But in the absence of any worksheets to know how they got to those numbers, I think if you use the higher numbers as the starting point for the analysis, yes, it is less than a 10% change. If you look at 533 or 500 as your starting point, then you do have more than the 10% change. I believe that neither the stipulation between the parties nor the statute justify using the guideline number as contrasted with the actual child support order as the starting point of a motion to modify.
Well, under your argument, though, opposing counsel asserts that, well, if that's right, she could have immediately, after securing permission to move to Hawaii, moved for modification and have said, I need an increase. And the stipulation would not have barred that, according to your argument.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's absolutely.
What incentive, then, is there to enter into any kind of stipulation?
I think that the incentive to the stipulation would be to present it to the court and present information that the stipulation is in the best interest of the child. Unfortunately, the 2003 court did not enter any findings to say that this stipulation was in the best interest of the child. Had it done so, mother would have had a much more difficult time in immediately trying to seek a modification. However, here she waited nearly 3 years before she saw the modification. Father has had some 3 years to benefit from this bargain, which was significantly in his favor. So I do think that there has been a give and take on both sides. But the policy and the statutes that address child support clearly state that it's to look at the best interest of the child, not a contract between the parties. And Your Honors, I ask you to apply the best interest of the child to determine what is the appropriate child support in this situation.
Ms. Gill, can I ask you, in with respect, you said a couple of times the court in 2003 didn't look at best interest. You've also said, and we're pretty adamant, that you are not appealing that 2003 order, and I accept and understand that. Don't we have to presume the court made a finding of best interest in 2003? It's that order is unchallengeable. The court would have had to make the finding of best interest. I recognize didn't say it, or we don't have it in the record, but don't we have to presume the court made that finding? We have to presume regularity of the court proceedings.
We do assume a correctness of the trial court's order. The silence as to best interests of the child is troubling in this situation, and That order has not been challenged. I think that now, if we look at the current financial situation, if there is an argument about what is in the best interest of the child, I think the trial court needs to hear evidence on that and make a determination of that. From what I see in the record, that has not been addressed yet.
And I know you probably want to reserve time, Ms. Gill, so I promise I'll ask one more question and shut up. Can we consider section, I understand the mathematics of your calculation, what we compare. What about section 1410.115.8e, which says we can basically ignore the guidelines if it would be inequitable, unjust, or inappropriate to do so? Does that factor in here?
That was not raised in the trial court by anyone. I think that if it's going to be raised, it should be raised in the trial court with appropriate evidence and argument on that issue.
Thank you.
I would like to reserve my remaining time for any rebuttal.
Thank you. Please the court. My name is Robert Warren. My registration number is 15138, and I represent the dad in this case. Our starting point is that we believe that mom wants to ignore the 2003 ruling and the agreement of the parties. I was part of that hearing that day, so I can tell the court that there were no guidelines. There were no worksheets. We were going from a 50-50 parenting plan down to a situation where mom wanted to relocate to Hawaii, which would significantly impact on dad's time with the child. The parties came in. Mr. Brown was representing mom. I was representing dad. I can't remember whether the CNFI was present or not. He might have been. And they said, we've agreed that child support will be $500 per month. It had been $500 plus the $33 was for some retroactive support. And they said, we've agreed that the child support will be $500 per month. And on that basis, dad will withdraw his objection to mom going to Hawaii. There's going to be some parenting time set up in the summertime. That was the only time that they would be sharing it. If mom was back and reasonably available, there would be some time, but it effectively cut dad's time significantly. The court knew that we were going from a worksheet B situation to a worksheet A situation. And I think I would agree with Judge Gabriel that even though Judge Miller at that time didn't make a whole mess of findings, he effectively approved that agreement and approved that arrangement. In doing so, he had to have accepted it as being in the best interest of the child. If he did not agree with that, then he didn't have to approve it. But that's a court order. And now we're talking about, do we modify? And I think that the section that Your Honor cited, plus if we read Leshinsky, which is cited by both parties, it basically says, and it mirrors 122, that if in fact we don't have a 10% deviation, then there is no rebuttable presumption, there's no modification. But what Leshinsky very clearly says, that if you go over a 10% modification, it creates a rebuttable presumption that there should or should not be a change. It doesn't say if you go over 10%, we automatically say, bang, that's the end of the story. So you can't
ignore. Under your analysis of this whole situation, how long is this stipulation, this order of 2003, good for? Does it have infinite life that you can never, ever modify this $500 a month child support?
Judge, I don't think so. And I'm not here to say that it's, you know, it has a life of its own and never goes away. But I think the trial court here did not abuse its discretion when it said, okay, let's take a look at what the support would have been on a worksheet A back in 2003 using the numbers that we now agree were the income or the imputed income to mom in 2003. And we came up in around 647 or something like that. And then, okay, now let's take a look at it now, recognizing that it's still a worksheet A, and we came up with a difference of about $12 or $13, which was clearly not 10%. I think the other thing that the court needs to keep in mind, and that the trial court hopefully kept in mind, is that the reason that the stepfather's insurance was going to cover the child in Hawaii was because Mr. Cabello's insurance, valid here in Colorado, did not cover the child in Hawaii when she lived out there. Would have covered it if she was there on a vacation for emergencies, but not otherwise. So we think when you take a look at the Leshinsky thing and then compare the findings of the court,
And the fact that the court used the income to determine what the support might have been in 2003, figured out what the deviation was, and then came back and said, well, I don't, if we didn't have any deviation and we didn't have any agreement, there would not be a 10%, and therefore statutory, we don't even have it. If there is a 10%, and I don't think you can ignore the findings and rulings of the court, they're mostly factual, if there's a 10% modification, that's a rebuttable presumption. Then the presumption becomes, is it fair that we modify it at this time? Mom's still living in Hawaii. Dad's still living in here. The same reasons and all the considerations that these parties relied upon when they entered into this agreement still apply. So factually, there is no change in circumstances, let alone a change in circumstances that requires modification.
What do we do with the language in Lishnevsky that says you determine that by looking at what is the current order? What do we do with that? What's your response to that argument?
Well, I think if you take a look at the current order and you take a look at the way that that Judge Lowry analyzed the thing, then you still have what is more or less a factual determination by the court as to whether that change in circumstances, if there is one, effectively makes the prior orders unfair.
So you're saying that the current trial judge can make a determination of what the, quote, current order in this circumstance means?
Well, I think you've got to go back and read what Judge Lowry effectively said, because what Judge Lowry said, when I compare the numbers that could have been there and the numbers now, I don't have a 10% change. He said, but he also went on to say, had I gone back and taken a look at what the support would have been without a deviation in 2003 per the agreement and now, and found that there was, you know, $100, $200, $300, or $400 difference in the thing, that might be a different set of circumstances, and I might find that there was a change in circumstances that warranted even modifying that. So he clearly looked at the numbers, and he clearly looked at the facts of the case as they existed.
But he didn't use any calculations from the $500 number.
Well, he can't, with all due respect to the court.
Tell me why he can't.
Well, these parties agreed to $500, and I can't tell you where they came up with $500, and if you read this entire record, you're never going to find out where they came up with $500. Somehow they came up with $500, and they walked into court the morning of the hearing and said, we've got an agreement, and we put it on the record, and that was it. So I think that $500 is not a starting point as a matter of law and a matter of fact, because everybody knows that was a deviation. And I think Judge Lowry was correct in effectively saying, okay, I'm going to look at what it would have been without a deviation and take a look at what it would have been now without any type of deviation. And if I see a big move in this thing, then maybe I'll move it. Judge Lowry did not foreclose moving that number.
So you're saying, I think I'm understanding, Judge Lowry, in your view, said you have to compare apples and apples. You have to look at what was Dad's actual financial circumstance at the time and Mom's, and then compare it to where we are today, regardless of what the stipulation may have been. Am I understanding you?
That's what he did. And right. The income difference for Mr. Cabela was about $200 a month.
Right. And so I had the same concern, almost asked the same question Judge Casebolt did. I think the case and the statute, you know, 1410.122 does say you look at the current support order. Regardless of how you got there, it's $500 a month. And what you're, I think, saying is that there are the other statutes, whether it's an equitable exception or whatever, or just it's a rebuttal, the presumption is rebuttable here. That's what lets us get to this analysis of comparing apples and apples. Am I tracking with you?
You're tracking.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, you can't ignore the 2003 agreement of the parties, and you can't ignore the 2003 order that everybody knew was a deviation. So we start out with Mr. Cabela giving up his right to challenge the move, and he got something in consideration. This was almost a 50-50 split on pairing time at that particular time. So I think if you compare deviation and then ignore the deviation, ignore this, you're comparing apples and oranges and not apples and apples. And I think what the judge tried to do was exactly that. Mom is still a voluntarily unemployed housewife, mom of two kids now by her current husband, still living in Hawaii. And I think that Judge Lowry applied the correct law. He looked and see whether or not there were any change in circumstances that would make that order unconscionable and unfair. And when he analyzed it and said everything is exactly the same now as it was in 2003, that with the exception of Mr. Cabela's income being maybe $200 more per month, that that was not a reason to modify this thing given all the facts and circumstances. And I think we have appended to our brief ruling of Judge Lowry. I think he's pretty clear, and I don't think I need to go over again, but in pages 2 through 6 of our brief, I think we outlined pretty clearly the facts of the case and what led to this order. Our particular position is, number one, that you can't ignore 2003. Number two, that when you take a look at Judge Lowry's analysis, there is no 10% move in the support. And if you ignore Judge Lowry's, then effectively, if you have more than 10%, then you have the rebuttable presumption, And we believe that Judge Lowry addressed that and effectively said there's no change in circumstances that will effectively make this prior order unfair, and therefore we're going to move, we're not going to modify the child support. We would ask this court, I'll just stand on the rest of the brief that I submitted, and we're just going to ask the court to approve Judge Lowry's ruling in this case.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I think that you've got the wrong, okay, it switched over to my amount of time. I disagree with the opposing counsel's statement that the parties had a 50-50 parenting time just before this relocation came before the court in 2003. Mother and her husband had been living in Arizona. There was a long-distance parenting plan in effect at that time, just as there had been before she moved to Arizona. She had lived in Chicago and had been a majority-time parent. The 2002 worksheet that produced the $533 per month support is a worksheet A based on mom being the majority time parent, no adjustment on parenting time. It does not contain any arrears or retroactive report. It's purely based on the income and health insurance payments for this child. I submit to you, Your Honors, that the current child support order should be the starting point under the statute, because otherwise, any time that the parents or the court deviates from the guidelines, any subsequent modification would then be caught between the justification for the deviation and the support guidelines. My time is up. I request that you reverse the trial court in this matter.
Thank you both for your arguments this morning. Case will stand submitted. We'll issue a written opinion in due course. That completes our docket for the morning. Court will be in recess. The bailiff may so announce.